it's kind of easy to look back now, but who knew that the mobile phone cameras would kind of, and it's happened so fast. It's like taken us by surprise. And I've you know, questioned myself, like, why didn't I see this?
If, like me, you grew up in the 80s and the 90s, you might remember the days when taking a picture sounded like this. Or even this. When I was growing up, photography studios were as popular as the neighborhood falafel joint. You'd find these shops just about every corner, big yellow boards with that word Kodak written on them. I had one such studio in the next building. It was called Al Haja Photo Studio. We'd go in and drop off our little roll of film, and they would print out our pictures on this noisy whirring machine. Remember as well, those were the days of dark rooms, where photos were actually developed. So why are we indulging in a little bit of nostalgia? Because today's guest, a third culture kid who spent a lot of his childhood in Dubai, spearheads the premier photo workshop and printing center in Dubai after he pivoted to it from brand marketing. From Amaya Media, I'm Chirag Desai, and you're listening to Tales of the Trade, a show about Dubai's entrepreneurs and pioneers, and the stories not just of their companies, but the communities they brought to life. Mohammed Somji identifies strongly with being a photojournalist, having documented stories via photography all over the UAE for a couple of decades now. And perhaps somewhere his ancestry has a part to play in this desire to document people and how they progress. His ancestors actually moved to East Africa from India over 200 years ago. And although his father moved to Dubai when Mohammed was quite young, his Tanzanian roots played a big part in his childhood.
I remember going back to Tanzania every summer, which I'm really glad that my dad did that. You know, holidays seem to be longer than they are now. But it was great because I felt like I was able to connect with home. We have all these kind of different facets. And I feel like, you know, the people in India don't see me as Indian. People in Africa don't see me as African. And then we live in Dubai, you know. So at least, you know, going to Tanzania in summer maybe made me feel like there was an attachment, or there was something, you know. And I mean, it's not very strong. It's a bit tenuous, but at least there's something, you know.
But you still have family there?
I do. Many of them have left since, but I do have some family, so I can avoid paying for a hotel when I go to Tanzania.
Dubai is home for Mohammed, or as he puts it, home with an asterisk. After leaving the city for a few years, he came back to Dubai towards the end of 1996 and needed to get serious about making a space for himself here.
I remember getting the Jebel Ali business directory. And I started sending, it was actually letters at the time, which I typed up, signed, and went to the post office and sent. And I only got far as B. But within B, we had Black & Decker, which was a company based in Jebel Ali. And I had sent them a letter to say, hi, you know, I've just come back from the States where I graduated. I've lived here all my life. I'm looking to get into a sales and marketing role.
For context, like, Black & Decker was the company when we were growing up, right? I mean, there were a few others, of course. You had your Philips, I think, and a couple others. But Black & Decker was the name to go to when it came to housewares.
Yeah, absolutely. It's in every household. It's a good brand name, and it's something that I'm excited about. And I was. I spent 2.5 years there. And Black & Decker then got sold to another company in the U.S. So at the time, they didn't know whether they would close the housewares divisions and kind of stick to the industrial power tools. And that's something I wasn't excited about. I really wanted to work in the consumer space. So I left and I joined Sharp Electronics for a bit.
Now, like Black & Decker, Sharp was another company living its heydays in Dubai and a household name for electronics at the time. He then moved on to another popular company called Kraft Foods. You may have heard of them. They ran brands like Toblerone and Maxwell House Coffee. But as time passed and those entrepreneurial itches got stronger, he decided to make a switch and pursue stories through photography.
The tipping point was reading a book by Naomi Klein called No Logo, which, you know, I'd been feeling some of those things, but, you know, she articulated really well, and I felt I was part of this machine that was, inherently bad for us as society, and it was, kind of overly capitalistic to, you know, that the expense of a lot of people, a few people were kind of benefiting. And it started making me think about what I really wanted to do, what I wanted to be part of, and what kind of legacy I wanted to have. And I was reading a lot about socio-political issues, especially 9/11 had happened around that time. And so I came across these photo essays, and I really kind of started getting interested in the power of the image, being able to tell a story that was a lot more powerful than just, you know, words, and I thought, this is interesting. This is something that I can, you know, get behind. And it wasn't just the photography aspect of it. It was also kind of learning about people and their stories and, you know, complex issues, and using photography as a way to anchor it. And I like to think at the time that I was a bit creative, and, you know, I would always love the part in my work at Kraft and Black & Decker, where I got involved in the brand design aspect and also kind of doing the campaigns and getting photos taken and things like that. So, you know, it wasn't something that was alien to me. It was something that I was familiar with, but I wasn't deeply invested in. And I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to leave the corporate world and going to become a documentary photographer. And in many ways, I was naive. I was drawn to this idea of, like, trying to change the world, you know, one photo essay at a time. And I learned very quickly that that was very naive and also not possible in today's media landscape. And it was also difficult to convince editors in the West to give assignments to, you know, people that were had my name, or, you know, because the what still happens, unfortunately, is a lot of photographers from the West are kind of parachuted out into the, you know, the global South, if you like, and they're telling our stories for us. And so I was like, okay, until I kind of sort out what I'm going to do, I need to make some money. And so one of the things that I made sure that I had was some kind of safety net. So for 6 months, I convinced my boss at the time, the owner of the company, to let me work part-time. And it allowed me some breathing space. And I continued to do some freelance work for them while starting to learn about photography, get my technical skills up to speed, research projects that I wanted to do. I took a workshop in Spain. And, you know, it allowed me to be ready when I finally got there. And when I got there, I was like, okay, I'm going to have passion projects that I'm going to pursue in my terms, because nobody's hiring me anyways, and I want to tell the stories that I want to tell. And I'm going to have to start doing some commercial work. And because I had a background in marketing and brand management, I was able to speak to companies and brands who needed photographs and say, okay, look, I'm gonna do this for you. In no other city anywhere in the world would you be able to get photography work that quickly without that experience or a portfolio. But, you know, it was a boom time in Dubai, and people needed images for, you know, whether it was their events or whether it was for their campaigns.
Today, Somji is the premier face of Gulf Photo Plus, or GPP, the go-to place in Dubai for photography workshops and talks, as well as artist exhibitions and printing. But GPP was actually founded around 2005 by Karen Hook, who had put together a community with a shared interest in learning photography.
And she had cuddled up some money together with her friends and brought a photographer from the U.S., from San Francisco, to teach a workshop in film photography, because that was still the dominating technology. Digital had just come by, but it was still too expensive and it wasn't there for the masses. And, you know, so all her friends were, you know, really excited when this workshop happened. So they're like, please do this next year. So she got her Media City license and went to, I think, Canon, and Canon gave her some money to invite him and maybe bring another guy, you know. So, and so we had kept in touch. And, you know, when she had learned about me moving from the corporate world to kind of doing photography, and she said, hey, let's have a coffee. I want to talk to you. She was leaving town and she said, I have this name, Gulf Photo Plus, and I have a hot desk in Media City, and I'm, you know, you may have a lot of business contacts. Maybe somebody wants to buy that. And I was like, I think I know someone. So I had some savings. So I said, I'll do it. And you know, this, I think we signed our agreement October or November 2007. And this is the same time, like a month later, the market just collapsed. And as it is, a lot of people, you know, friends and family were like, are you crazy? You're leaving a good corporate job. You had, you know, exciting prospects ahead of you, and you're going to become a photographer? Do that on your weekend, I would hear, you know?
Tell me why you said yes to that agreement, though. Were you thinking is, okay, well, I'm getting a license and a name associated with photography, and the fact that there'll be at least an annual thing I can do?
No, it was much more than that. I think a few months before that, I had gone to Spain, and I had met some people who were at this workshop, and it was a documentary storytelling workshop. And it's telling that a lot of the people that I met there, I'm still very good friends with, and we've actually worked together. One of them, the person who set it up, curated our last exhibition at Gulf Photo Plus. And what I saw there was this kind of fraternity and solidarity between people in that photography world who were very helpful and who were going out of their way to write to me to say, hey, Mohammed, you know, I know you're making this journey from this. Here are some grants and here are some people that you can meet. And I was just like, wow, I'd never seen that in the business world.
What Mohammed could see, therefore, was that GPP had the potential to become a platform to support photographers while giving him the support he needed to pursue his passion of telling stories through photos.
The plan was that this was going to be something I would do on the side and I would pursue my own work. But because we started getting really busy and I was starting to do a lot of workshops, teaching myself and getting other people to help me as demand grew, that part was taking a back seat. And it always kind of was something that was nagging me, and it, you know, till today I feel like I don't devote enough time to what I, you know, principally left my job to do. And you know, but I've taken some steps in the last year to be able to do that more, and you know, I'm partly successful, mixed reviews on that.
So what Mohammed did to make sure that he didn't let go of his original passion, he set up another entity called Seeing Things with a partner, Amaresh, who was specializing in food photography. Somji was more architecture and lifestyle. And so Seeing Things wasn't really a backup plan, but it was a way to tap into his real passion of telling stories through photos, while GPP explored the more uncharted territories of setting up a platform and training center for photographers.
GPP, like, you know, nothing like that existed. You know, in the beginning, it was like, let's see what happens with this. You know, but at the same time, while I was, you know, going for meetings with GPP or teaching a workshop, I'd go for a shoot after because I needed to make sure. Because, you know, when we first started, income just wasn't coming in. There was, you know, so I needed to kind of tick that, you know, keep that ticking. And so what I would do was do photography assignments. And so when GPP became, in effect, a full-time job, I thought, okay, I can't shoot as much for my clients. So I hired somebody from Argentina at the time who was a friend of a friend. She had graduated from a photography college in Buenos Aires.
Sorry, I want to interrupt you there for a second. I know Argentina is not the US,
right,
and doesn't entirely contradict your original point, which is, hey, they import photographers from elsewhere and tell their stories. Why Argentina then?
So I had a good friend who was a client, and you know, she trusted me with a lot of the work that I was doing for her, and I said to her that, you know, I'm kind of struggling to kind of keep up with my photography assignments, and she said, look, I have this friend who's she's one of my best friends. She's graduating from photography school. She will, you know, work her heart out for you, and you should consider her. And I knew that if you were a good photographer and you were in Dubai, you're not going to work for someone, right? You're going to do your own thing. And so I thought, okay, let me speak to her, kind of see her work. We Skyped, and, you know, I had Rosie's endorsement. So, yeah, you know, she was great, and she took up a lot of, absorbed a lot of that work that we were getting and was kept the client so happy that we grew that too. And then it became a thing, like a bigger thing with, like, you know, a few more employees. And we absorbed that within the ecosystem of GPP. So same accountant, same physical space. It was registered on the same premises, different trade license, of course.
So as Mohammed started focusing his energies entirely behind GPP, and despite coming out of the global financial crisis when they began, a few things were lining up for the industry at large. Digital photography was going mainstream around that time. You could now buy professional cameras for under the $1,000 barrier. Mirrorless cameras were gaining in popularity. And then, of course, in 2007, a new device arrived that meant that there was a camera in the hand of every individual.
Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. Support for this episode of Tales of the Trade comes from In5. In5 is a leading platform for entrepreneurs and startups, providing simplified business setup, creative workspaces, mentorships, workshops and events, and access to a network of over 100 investors and strategic partners. More than 200 of the region's fastest growing startups call In5 their home, having attracted over 390 million dirhams in funding and creating more than 400 jobs across the tech, media, and design industries. You can also be a part of a thriving startup community where great ideas are nurtured into successful businesses. The place is here, your time is now. Visit infi.ae for more. Our thanks to InFi for their support of this show and Amaya Media. Welcome back. I'm Chirag, and you're listening to Tales of the Trade with our guest, Mohammad Sumji, director at Gulf Photo Plus and founder of Seeing Things Photography. So by 2009, GPP was getting quite busy, and they'd already been contacted by international photographers who were visiting them or just wanted to collaborate with them in Dubai. And this is when he brought on a partner, Hala, whom he'd known from his college days. They connected almost instantly on the larger vision. And together, they brought Gulf Photo Plus into its current home at Al Sirkal Avenue.
I went to Al Sirkal Avenue, and I remember when I first called them, they were like, whatever. You know, they completely ignored me. They were like, who is this guy? Yeah. And I still joke with the person who was in the sales team at the time. But when we made a case for it, we invited them over to see, we shared with them the kind of, you know, press that we had received and stuff like that. We were the fourth gallery, or the third gallery there, you know, or the fourth. And so, you know, we were a gallery space. And so, you know, we were going to do some art programming. And so they were like, okay, this is something that we could
More aligned with what they're doing as well, yeah.
When we were at Knowledge Village, we were doing workshops. And we had a small IKEA shelf where we had books that we sold to people who came to the workshop. And we were doing consulting for different brands. And so we knew that by moving to the other space, we now had the opportunity to offer our, you know, studio workshops. We could have a space dedicated to selling products. So, you know, whether it's cameras or books or photography accessories, we could have multiple workshops that could be happening at the same time. And we had a gallery space. So we needed a curator and somebody who managed the gallery and the art side of it. We needed an accountant, which we had managed ourselves before. But, you know, because of the many different streams of revenue, we needed to make sure that we had somebody to help us with that. We had to have a receptionist, somebody who was at front of house to be able to attend to our calls and to attend to walk-ins, because that's something we didn't have before. We were in Knowledge Village and people only came because they had a purpose. Now people were just walking in because we had galleries next door. And then we needed somebody to kind of be our kind of driver and space, you know, maintain the space, kept it clean, managed all the inventory of the studio lights and things like that. So it all added up. And before we knew it, we were, you know, a team of, I think 9 or 10. And our challenge was that we needed a multidisciplinary space that, you know, provided us an office space, a studio space, a gallery space, and that, you know, we didn't have a lot of money to do it. And we were very adamant about not getting any financing. We had to self-finance this because I had seen a lot of businesses in that time fold because they couldn't, you know, repay loans. And we, Hala and I, had made it very clear that we were not going to extend ourselves beyond what we could afford.
So you're talking about the business not taking any debt.
Correct.
Did you consider getting an investor, for example, instead?
We did. And we had a couple of people who had offered and we said that we didn't want to. We were very happy with the arrangement that we had. And if we could make the numbers work for the fit out that we wanted, we would not, you know, solicit any financing. I was filing my papers on my Dropbox, and I found the Google Drive, actually, and I found the analysis that I'd made at the time. And I was like, I was crazy to, like, you know, take that chance because, you know, we went from, you know, expectations of a certain amount in terms of revenue to, like, you know, 6 times as much because of the bigger space that we had and, you know, that we were going to do printing and exhibition sales. And, you know, some of those things worked, some of those things didn't. It was very brave at the time. And I didn't realize it until now when I'm seeing it, that if I had to make that call now, I'd be a lot more wary. But of course, it was a different time. You know, the industry has changed a lot and it's changed so rapidly that it, you know, took me by surprise too. But it was very bullish and it was very you know, gung-ho. And fortunately, we were able to match those expectations for the first few years just because, you know, we had the space to be able to do more things.
We live in an era where everybody's a photographer today. Our smartphones are fantastic cameras. And while that's great from a mainstream adoption point of view, it makes the camera almost a commodity. So today, the direct competition from photography centers doesn't just come from camera companies, but phone manufacturers as well. And as Mohammad notes, it's hard to keep competing when someone new is always offering something for free while you have to sustain a business.
I just think back to how different the market or the industry was at that time versus now, which is like 7 years later. You know, the mobile phone interrupted or disrupted everything and has played a big role in what has become of GPP since then. In terms of the camera market, has been shrinking since 2016. and continues to shrink at very high rates. And that's changed, you know, so people aren't buying as many cameras. And because of that, the camera manufacturers are offering a lot more workshops by themselves, and most of them are for free. And so it's hard to compete with free. So we've had to, you know, sit down and really recalibrate our business and, you know, look at alternative or additional sources of revenue. And it's been a challenge. And I think we have, for the most part, been able to find a way to stay afloat. And listening to Kemsley's podcast, I think we have a lot of the same challenges. We have to fend for ourselves. You know, we've had to be very adept and agile in finding new sources of revenue in very short times while navigating a market or industry that's changing literally on a monthly, quarterly basis when phones come out with different, you know, technologies. And even within the camera industry alone, the shift from DSLR to mirrorless has affected how we do things and the kind of workshops that were happening, plus the amount of resources that are online so people feel like, I don't need to take a workshop, I can go on YouTube. It's a very different experience and people learn that later, but, you know, it's these things that we have to really convince people. So we have to work a lot harder now than we used to. Before, people would go online, photography training, workshops, classes, come to us, boom. You know, and now we have to really make the effort to win the customer. And I think what we've done well is, you know, piggyback on this social media craze where there's a lot of people who want content on a regular basis.
This week on Tutorial Tuesday, I'm talking about lenses. Why would you pick something like this or pick something like this one per se?
Is this where the idea of doing these like mini trainings and the Tutorial Tuesdays, right? Is that where these ideas have come up?
Totally. I think we've realized that now we have a bigger market in terms of absolute numbers because now everyone's a photographer. And how do we serve them? Also, how do we serve the people who are, you know, trying to cater to them? So brands, for example, need help with their photography and video requirements. And, you know, for some of the things, they're going to go to a professional photographer or a studio. But for many of the things that they need to do on a regular basis, they need to take photos themselves. And so we've been successful in converting a lot of those people to doing one-on-one individual or custom bespoke training. So that's helped. And, you know, we have a very solid printing business because we are all photographers. So Hala, myself, and a lot of the people who work with us are actually photographers. We know what we're doing with color management and, you know, with the kind of quality of paper and what people want. And so that's a business that we've grown significantly in the last few years that has offset some of the challenges we've had on the education side.
And you've seen a clear decline in attendance to workshops and stuff?
Absolutely, for sure. And, you know, it goes without saying. I mean, if the camera market is shrinking and they have more options for education like YouTube and what have you, then yes. And I think what we've done to address that is to offer other workshops that we weren't offering on a regular basis before, you know, so more medium to advanced workshops, mobile video, mobile photo, mobile editing, you know, food, family photography, you know, things like that.
How do you see the industry, let's say maybe in the next couple of years, and then where do you see GPP playing that?
I think even though the mode of taking photos is changing, people still need photos, right? And videos. So definitely we're looking at some of these growth areas. So video, you know, content for social media, content for, you know, brands. The other thing that we have worked on a lot is building our kind of art programming. And we've been working with local, regional, and international organizations to be the kind of authority on photography. So whether it's working together with Warehouse 421 in Abu Dhabi to curate or, you know, put together an exhibition in their space, or whether it's working with the large organizations like, you know, Jameel Arts Center or Dubai Tourism, we have a service that we can provide. We've worked with most of the phone manufacturers, whether it's trying to identify artists or photographers who can be their face or their ambassadors, because that's a space that we know very well. We know what's going on in the market. We know who the good photographers are. We can discern talent. So we'll often get big brands coming to us and saying, for our campaign, we need to identify 6 photographers, 3 males, 3 females, etc. And we have a pulse on that because we have our art programming that's very active, and we have our festival annually that we host exhibitions. So we, you know, are kind of very much in tune with what's going on in the local and regional market. And, you know, there are a lot of photography organizations, initiatives, and I think what we do very well and what sets us apart is we are very kind of embedded or rooted in the region. And I think I've taken on more of a kind of curator mentor role in some of the younger photographers whose work we've shown, or I've been curating a festival in Holland, one of the top five photo festivals in the world, and I was appointed as the associate curator for their edition last year and then again for next year. So I'm able to try and get our the work and the talent that's here an international audience. And that's what we'd like to do more of. It's just like a company would hire an agency to do that. We're that specialist agency.
If you look back now at everything you've done with GPP particularly, was there something you would like to do differently if you could start over?
Yeah, I think even though we had an accountant or a finance person when we moved to El Circol and our business model changed, I feel that that person let us down in terms of not having a grasp. And I think many of the problems that we face today could have been mitigated because, I didn't kind of get the data analysis that I should have in terms of, forecasting and things like that. And again, that's our issue because we trusted that person and, what have you. But I think largely I would have had a much more tighter control on the finance or the accounting side, both of us. I think being a bit more circumspect with the growth that we had, you're in this fervor and you're in this mode, and perhaps there we could have, put the brakes on and some things. It's hard to say. It's kind of easy to look back now, but anticipating where the market would have gone, so we could have made the changes that we've made now quicker. But who knew that the mobile phone cameras would kind of
yeah, that's a bit of a tough one. Agreed. Yeah.
And it's happened so fast. It's like taken us by surprise. And I've questioned myself, like, why didn't I see this? Is it a deficiency in me? Did I screw this up? And I think I realized that, like, I wasn't negligent. It just kind of happened so fast. It kind of crept up behind you, And if anything, it's made me a lot more conscientious about being aware of trends. And every time there's a new camera on the market, I'm curious to see what's happening, with the industry and what changes are happening.
Mohammed hasn't quite forgotten what he originally set out to do. While he finds running workshops and exhibitions extremely fulfilling, he still wants to pursue telling his own stories and expanding creatively as well. And so as Gulf Photo Plus evolved and expanded, he had a partner now, employees, people in key roles, he was finally able to take a step back and look again at his other venture, Seeing Things, which had also been growing well since 2008.
2 years ago, or almost 2 years ago, we made the decision to have our own space so that it wouldn't encroach upon the GPP space, because it would then conflict with workshops or, using the studio or the gallery space, and we needed to have a larger space. As our GPP business has struggled, Seeing Things conversely has grown, and we've been able to kind of leverage or capitalize on this need for a lot of, big brands, but also small to medium brands who have a voracious appetite for content, who cannot afford the big ad agencies, where there's a lot of fat and, it's expensive to produce content. The balance of where I've been working has changed as well, in the sense that it's taken me away from the kind of daily grunt work and to have a much more business development role and almost an advisory role in the last year or so, while I can focus on growing the Seeing Things business. And it's also been interesting for me to try and multitask, if you like. And the third component is my own personal artwork, which I'm trying to also accelerate.
Is there a specific way you go about splitting your time?
Because they're within the photography space, there is some overlap in the sense that it's not completely different. I don't have to be in a different mindset, and I can kind of cycle over to GPP and have a quick meeting. So I was just there today for a quick half an hour to sign some papers and meet with some of the team to talk about something. And with the way work is, we can kind of work from anywhere. But yeah, sometimes it's difficult to kind of be in the zone, for something. And obviously, it also means that you have, if you wear two hats or three hats, you have three times as much work, And I think when I left the corporate world, I was very much signed on to this notion of working all the time. And that hasn't changed. And I wish I had more time for myself, or for, more time to spend with the family. But it's you know, it's a choice that you make, right? To it's not a choice that you make, but it's not a luxury that you have necessarily, you know.
I'm always fascinated by how entrepreneurs view, well, entrepreneurship. And I say that because starting a business and running it is a very individual process. It can get extremely lonely when the buck stops with you, while you're also in charge of the well-being of employees and customers. And yet there is such a draw to it, right? Even for people who've never dreamt of owning their own business.
When I see these articles on Harvard Business Review, and I think entrepreneurship, like you said, has become a buzzword, has become like a fad almost, and it's like...
Now it's cool.
Yeah. And I don't know what the success rate is, but I'm willing to bet that there are a lot more failures than there are successes. And I never thought I would be an entrepreneur when I first got out of college and I was working. I was very kind of happy doing what I was doing. And, you know, life happens. And then, you know, you take a path that you don't expect to kind of chart for yourself and you end up where you are. And I think, you know, it's not that easy. You have to have a temperament and a mentality for it. I know lots of people, you know, who tell me that they could never be an entrepreneur. And just like I don't think I could be a bean counter or somebody who's sitting behind a desk all the time. You know, the idea of entrepreneurship being somebody who is, you know, bootstrapping or got money and setting up a business with a purpose to, you know, basically bring more money than they spend is great. But I think you can also be an entrepreneur in your job in the sense that you could build something out of what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like because I don't think it's just the point of owning your own business.
This is something you could do inside your job, for example.
Correct.
That you're getting at. Right?
Correct. But, you know, I'm all for people. And you know, we come across a lot of people who come to Gulf Photo Plus, want to take a few workshops and become a photographer. And, you know, it's very difficult, but we tell them, and I always tell the guys to be, you know, kind of pass on the same message that, look, they could be brilliant creatives and brilliant photographers, but if you don't have the temperament to be in a client meeting or to understand a brief or to have that discipline to invoice people and to kind of do all the paperwork that comes with, you know, doing a business.
The non-glamorous side of entrepreneurship, which people don't often talk about.
Totally. Like, you know, I just sat for the last 2 hours before you came doing an Excel sheet. And, you know, that's not glamorous. You know what I mean? Or even like retouching photographs and you know, taking out stains from a building in an architecture photograph. But, you know, there's a lot of that people tend to gloss over and don't appreciate that, you know, what goes into it. I mean, listening to your the Tales of the Trade podcast, I think it's a recurring theme that, you know, people don't have time for things that they would like to do or hang out with their friends and these are real sacrifices. And, you know, before people jump on this kind of bandwagon, I think they need to realize these things.
You can find all of Muhammad's work at his website, muhammadsomji.com. And of course, check out GPP's workshop schedule by visiting gulfphotoplus.com. And if you enjoyed listening to Muhammad, he also joined us on our other show, Kramasutra, for an episode called The Outliers, where he helped us understand how the various communities landed up living in different parts of Dubai. There's a link to all of this in our show notes. This episode of Tales of the Trade was produced by me, Chirag Desai, with support from Gaya, Abhishek Venkatasubramanian, Sukena Kazmi, and Zainab Ujaini. Original music for the show was composed by Rainer Erlings. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please do share it with your friends. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Connect with us on Instagram at talesofthe.trade and find all of our episodes for free in your favorite podcast player or on the web at talesofthe.trade. Tales of the Trade is part of the Amaya Media Network. You can find out more at amaya.media. New episodes of this season will be available every second Tuesday.